Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 89 of Nerd Pride Radio. 89, the basis of Helen's Law. No, different Helen. This is as a surname, H-E-L-L-I-N. Specifically, Dionysy Helen, who was a Polish pathologist about 100 years ago. And this Dr. Helen came up with Helen's Law, a rule that says that 1 in 89 natural births will result in twins. The instance of triplets would be 1 in 89 squared. The instance of quadruplets, 1 in 89 to the third power. And it turns out that those numbers were a fair rough approximation. Not exactly correct, but it was an easy rule of thumb to remember, and so it was used for quite a while, and is still known. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like cut grass and freshly pressed marching band uniforms. Oh, this is going to be great. Welcome to it. Real quick, before I really get into it here, updates! Last week in the Listener Betrayal, Eli had recommended that I try out the Punch Brothers and their new album, Phosphorescent Blues. He said it was very cool because it's bluegrass with a more modern sound to it. And so I went and I tried it out, and he was exactly right. If you haven't listened to Punch Brothers, if you didn't listen to it based on that recommendation, now do it based on this recommendation, because it was really cool. I looked him up, and it turns out, actually, I liked Phosphorescent Blues. I thought it was fun. But then I went to listen to some of their other stuff, and it turns out that their previous album, entitled Who's Feeling Young Now, was even better. I liked it. It was a little, I don't know, it was more accessible for me. And I love bluegrass, but I'm also a music amateur, and anyway. I don't have a very sophisticated ear, but I know what I like, and I really enjoyed this. So, Punch Brothers, thank you, Elihad. Excellent recommendation. Everyone else, go check it out. But you know what? Enough of that. It is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me, where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, checking out the master list, the first thing on my list.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
That's right, it's my gaming table. Role-playing games, video games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. Here's what's happened. I have, on my master list, it says, what kids can handle in a game. And it's been on my list for a long time. And as I was developing it, because I'm like, you know what? I've been putting this off. I'm trying to develop it this week and come up with something to flesh out my thoughts. And I realized I don't have anything new to say on this. I mean, I've covered it all before on more than one occasion, talking about my kids and gaming and, you know, maturity level and how we deal with complicated situations and that kind of stuff. I realized I've done it all before. And, Yet at some point, I felt the need to put it on my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod yet again, and I just keep skipping over it week after week because I feel like it's important, but I just haven't found a new angle on it. So, I even had a chance to take it off when I did the clean-up fingertip segment a while back. I had a chance to just, get it done, get it over with, get it off the list. And I skipped it because, I wanted to keep it. I felt like I had something important to say, but I just can't figure out what. So, I'm just going to cross it off the list now. I'm done. I mean, it's gaming with kids. The answer to what kids can handle in a game is essentially, it's individual. It's a matter of judging each kid and what they're ready for because, I steer clear of most sexual issues when it's, playing with the younger kids, who are 9 and 11, almost 12 now. And I kind of steer away from some of the more complicated sexual stuff, but, not entirely. You can do relationship stuff to a degree. Obviously, there's tons of violence in the games that we deal with, but even then, the violence is often couched in terms of moral questions that, yes, you have these prisoners, and yes, if you let them go, it's possible that they're going to do something that will wind up spoiling your plans, but you can't just leave them here to die or just kill them outright because, you're supposed to be a good character, right? And so things are phrased in terms of moral questions and what's most profitable to them versus what is the morally right thing to do, that sort of stuff. And it's stuff that I've talked about before. And even, the only new thing we've got is the fact that one of my kids, 17-year-old Aiden, has been playing an evil character, which is a new thing. But as a 17-year-old, he's cool with handling an evil character. I thought, he's mature enough to deal with that and to come up with cool stuff. And he's done really well with it. And it has posed some really interesting questions for the younger kids because they're not evil. And they know they're not evil. And yet, this evil character really comes up with some good ideas. And he is kind of convincing. And he is kind of our leader. And so do they follow him, or do they, how do they find ways to stand up to him? So anyway, I wasn't going to delve into it too much, just broad overview. But again, it's dependent on each kid, right? Yeah, I've talked about it too many times. I just wanted to say just enough about it that I can cross it off my list. The completest portion of me can now say, hey, check, done, crossed off, let's move on. Wow, despite how lame that segment was and how incomplete, you wouldn't believe how much better I feel. Oh, that has been weighing on me. All right, enough. Next up, Roku! Actually, I could have done this in updates, but I'm going to do it under Roku. And Roku is, by the way, for those of you who don't know, Roku is the name of the box that I use to access streaming services off the internet. And since I've gotten rid of cable, I watch almost everything on my Roku, and I love just saying Roku that way. Hold on. Aiden's here.
Can I talk about my Instant Watch experience over the weekend?
If you can talk about your Instant Watch experience in under 6 minutes, yes. You want to get in on the mic?
Yeah, I would love to, actually. Walking around everything here. So, some of you may know, if you've listened to the podcast before, that, I have been looking for a good horror movie, and I finally found it.
Yeah, he's, again, 17 years old, and so jaded and cynical that he feels like it's all been done before. There's no good horror movies left.
That is
left.
Not what I'm
saying. Yes,
I'm not saying that it hasn't been done before. I'm saying that it's all jump scares. There's no suspense anymore.
Right. He's been looking, questing for good quality horror. God, they just don't make them like they used to. That's what he says.
And The Babadook finally did.
Yes, they watched The Babadook without us. Him and his brother, who, by the way, his brother Jacob, he hates horror movies. Hates them. Won't watch them with him. We have tried for years to get Jacob to sit down and enjoy some horror movies with us as a family.
Hey, Jacob, because, watch The Babadook? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and so now me and Lisa are off at some family function having no fun whatsoever. Sorry if any of you are listening, but family functions are boring. All right. Anyway, we're off at a family function suffering, and we told the kids that they could stay back because, oh, you know what, you guys don't want to go to this. You'll be bored out of your skulls. You guys stay here. And so what happens while we're out of town? They watch a horror movie without us. Jacob is like, oh, well, my friend said this Babadook thing was really good. Sure, I'll watch.
Not only was it a horror movie, but a horror movie they wanted to see.
He's a jackass. That's what I'm saying.
It was amazing.
Yeah, we really did. We came up, we get home, and we walk in, and they're literally a half hour into the movie already. And we're like, what? You what? What? And they're like, well, you want us to roll it back? No, it's too late. If you had called us, we would have come home early, but no.
It is in my top five horror movies.
And he can't really tell you anything about it, because if he spoils it for me, I'll have to break his legs. How good was it?
It was, again, my top five of all horror movies.
Okay. Based on, what kind of review can you give without being spoilery?
That I was waiting for jump scares the entire movie, and not a single one happened.
Jacob said the same thing. Said he's got his hand out, and he's like gripping his brother's leg, arm, shoulder, yeah. Whatever. He would grab some, because, you know, when you get scared, you need something to squeeze and hurt, apparently.
Yeah.
And he kept waiting and waiting, and he was all ready to hurt his brother if something jumped out and scared him, and then it never did happen.
And that's the worst, because you're holding, you're just like, okay, wait, here, no, wait, no, no, now, what, no, no, when, what, no, when, what are you doing to me?
And I don't know how big the studio was that made it. It's apparently an Australian film,
yeah,
from what I've heard.
It looks real indie.
Yeah, and indie, small picture. And it came out of Australia, and I've heard really good things about it. I listen to, obviously, lots of different podcasts, and I have heard many people comment on how good The Babadook is, and so we've had
amazing.
It on our list on Netflix, and we've been meaning to watch it, and then, of course, well, now you've ruined it. Now I just don't want to see it. I'm done.
Is this sort of like The Hunger Games?
Yes, this is exactly like you not liking The Hunger Games. and then the other movie that I haven't seen this weekend is The Avengers. I am actually, it is slowly dawning on me that I don't think I'm going to see The Avengers in theaters. And not for a lack of wanting, because Lord knows I want to go see that movie, and yet I don't think it's going to happen. I'm really disappointed. So you guys cry for me, because my life is really, really hard. So there you go.
Oh boy, speaking of Age of Ultron, you know that Find My Age thing going around?
No, I don't.
Well, yeah, you sent in a picture and judging by the thing's database, it tries to tell how old you are. Age of Ultron, 54.
Wow, that's pretty good. What was that? I can't remember the joke. It was,
The Age of Ultron, the location of Ultron, the sex of Ultron.
That was the one. Thank you. That's the... Although, again, I don't have one here. The, Diet Dr. Pepper bottles that I drink at work, they all have Age of Ultron ads on them. And for whatever reason, when I'm looking at the bottle where it sits on my desk, that it's just at the right distance, that I know it says Age of Ultron, but from where I'm sitting, I swear to God, it looks like the abs of Ultron. Which I don't know what
are
kind
you
of...
Are you looking at this? Dude, do you see this? I'm not even flexing.
Yeah, I don't know what sort of workout video that is, but it makes me laugh every time.
Okay. Now do leg lifts before Zot!
Okay, you need to go to bed.
Aww.
It is your bedtime. I know. I'm sorry, dude. You gotta go.
He's
adorable. But anyway, I was in the middle of telling you about Roku before Aiden came in and contributed. And all I wanted to say is that I finished watching Daredevil, and I love Daredevil. The Daredevil TV series on Netflix is phenomenal. It is, you want to watch it. You want to, if you've already seen it, you know I'm right. That thing was great. I have no complaints about that series. I really don't. I've heard, I saw one reviewer who complained that he thought Daredevil's costume ultimately looked a little silly. Psst, that guy's an idiot. The costume was awesome. It worked out really well. It was beautifully done. I've heard someone else complain that they thought the show was a little bit padded at pieces. They kind of stretched it out to fill 13 episodes. No, wrong. The pacing was excellent. It's just a good movie. And like I said last time, brutal. Just absolutely brutal, beginning to end. And I like the fact that it is somehow they managed to make an origin story for Daredevil that extends over 13 episodes without seeming tedious. And also made it at the same time an origin story of Kingpin. And look, Vincent D'Onofrio can do no wrong in my book. I have never seen him phone it in. And I'm there's probably places where Vincent D'Onofrio has phoned it in. But, I mean, he was in The Cell, which was a terrible movie, and he was brilliant in it. He was in Men in Black, which was an awesome movie that I really loved. But in Men in Black, he played a bug. He played a bug, and he killed it. I mean, he killed it. He reminds me of Christopher Walken in the way that he can overact a piece. He could tear up a cheesy, horrible piece. A role that really has no right to be that good. And yet, because you've got that personality embodying that, they're really good at what they do. And Vincent D'Onofrio, I think, is awesome. And I love him every time I see him on screen. Even if I don't like Law and Order Criminal Intent, which I don't like Law and Order Criminal Intent. The show is just not Law and Order. But I love watching Vincent D'Onofrio on it. The seasons that have him on it, I can watch him. It's all about the interview scenes. I mean, it's just him facing off with whoever he's got in the interrogation room. And Vincent D'Onofrio plays these psychological games, and it's so beyond reality, so beyond anything that could actually be happening in a police interrogation room, and yet I love watching him do it. So, anyway. But, and this is not to say that he dominates this show, because he doesn't. Vincent D'Onofrio is excellent as Kingpin. Absolutely wonderful. But it's not really his story. It is, to a degree. It is the origin of Kingpin. It shows us how all this comes about. He is the big bad guy. But it's really about Daredevil. And it's about Matt Murdock, and it's about Foggy Nelson, and it's about Karen Page, and the three of them as a law firm, I guess, but as a team. And it's just great. And so, therefore, all I can say is I love Daredevil, and you should watch it. And I am so looking forward to everything that's going to follow this, all right? Because I've loved the Marvel movies, and I think the Marvel movies are, as my brother says, look, they've nailed down the action movie formula for superhero films. They know exactly what they're doing, and they keep playing out this same formula over and over with vague, slightly different iterations. But it's essentially the same formula each time, whether it's Guardians of the Galaxy, or it's Avengers, or it's Thor. They do the same sort of thing. And it works. It works really, really well. But are we going to get to the point where we kind of get tired of this formula? We're going to have to do something new to mix up the movies. And hopefully the new wave of, Black Panther and Captain Marvel and Doctor Strange, hopefully these are going to do something different with the superhero ideas. And the Netflix series, at least starting with Daredevil, has given me hope that we're going to see something different now. Because Daredevil 2, the second season, is already approved. And now we have got Jessica Jones coming out. We have got Luke Cage and Iron Fist, which means we have the potential for Heroes for Hire. But actually, no, they're going to take all these characters and build them into the Defenders. And, as we've been discussing on my website, the Marvel now owns again Blade. They can bring out Blade. They own Punisher again, so they can bring out Punisher. They got Elektra back in addition to Daredevil now. There is so much they can do with it. And the one I'm really hoping for with this, what they're referring to as the street level Marvel for the Netflix series, and that's Daredevil really is. It's none of this huge world changing stuff. It's saving a neighborhood. That's what this is about. It's about this section of the city, and it's street level. And when it comes to street-level heroes, my brother said Moon Knight. Oh, yeah, Moon Knight. And what I said was Cloak and Dagger. Oh, how much did I love Cloak and Dagger? They were so great, and they are so... theirs would make a perfect TV drama, because they've got that interpersonal stuff that works really, really well. And that gritty street-level, the way Daredevil's been presented here. Just beautiful. So anyway, there's so much they can do with it. As I said on the boards... these are my comic books. I don't read comic books anymore. I love them. I love comics. I will occasionally pick up a trade paperback, a graphic novel, but not often. And I will, at least once a month, I happen to be in a bookstore, and I will browse the comic shelf. I'll look at the covers. I'll pick one up and flip through it. and I will wistfully wish that I could be back in the days where I was collecting comics and wish that I had the time and money to invest in that. But comics are expensive, and there's a lot of them you have to follow, and it's too much work. I've tried getting back into them, and I can't. It's not something I'm capable of right now, but I can watch the series on Netflix. I can watch the movies as they come out, except for Avengers, obviously. I'll be getting to it. I just hope I don't have to wait till it's on video. I really hope I can get it sooner than ordering it on disc. But we'll see. Doesn't matter. But to see Daredevil and to see all of these street-level series that are supposed to follow, hopefully it all pans out. Daredevil was so successful that, no, they have to keep going forward with these. There's going to be at least a few of them before... You know, it would have to take a real major screw-up at this point for them to bail on it. So I'm so looking forward to them. This is where my comics are now. This is where I get to see the new stories, or, for that matter, possibly rehashed old stories that I never did get to in the comics. That's fine with me, too. I'm excited about all of them. Anyway, that's my Roku for this week. Daredevil, you have to watch it. Get excited. You deserve this. We all do. All right, what's up next?
Don't know much about history.
Of course, it's the Unnamed History segment. Spectacular. And, by the way, if you guys can hear that cracking noise, the occasional pop crack in the background, it's the guinea pigs. They apparently are cracking open seeds over there and having a good time with it. And I'm not going to disturb them because at least they're not squealing, right? They're happy. Let's leave them to their thing. I can move them to the next room, but then they'll be all upset because they hate it when you carry the cage around. We won't do that. Anyway, Unnamed History segment. That's where I was. This was in an interview with Carol Spinney. Carol Spinney was the man inside the Big Bird costume on Sesame Street for a long time. And Carol Spinney tells a story about how in 1986, he was in negotiations with NASA because they wanted him, as Big Bird, in costume, to ride up in the space shuttle. They wanted Big Bird in orbit, in space. And he apparently has told this story in a number of interviews, and it's a great story. And it turns out that there are apparently some difficulties with getting a man in an 8-foot-tall bird costume that sheds feathers constantly into space. Who knew, right? Yeah, that's, I mean, the 8-foot-tall, so, you know, 8-foot-tall, and by the way, he only has one hand that's usable because the other hand is held up over his head nonstop to work that mouth. But, not only is he 8-foot-tall, so it's a problem getting him around in the shuttle at all, but that nonstop shedding in the enclosed, in weightless environment of space, that's not really good. So it ultimately didn't work out. But the way he tells the story, he says, yeah, in 1986, they wanted to send him up, and it was a joint venture with Jim Henson Studios and NASA, and it was going to be this huge educational thing. It's to get kids excited about space. That's why NASA would be interested in the first place. And I don't blame them. You get kids excited because there's Big Bird going through the whole process, and Big Bird gets out to space, and they would record actual segments for Sesame Street while he's up there. And it would have been the coolest thing ever. Absolutely ever. But they didn't pick him because the costume was unworkable. And instead, a woman, a teacher named Terry McAuliffe, went up on the shuttle instead. And if you haven't guessed by now, well, that's the shuttle that blew up. And Terry McAuliffe and the other 7 astronauts aboard the space shuttle, they all died, tragically. And Spinney talks about everyone at Sesame Street. They were watching that launch live. And he said when the shuttle blew up, he said they were just in tears, all of them. It was just tragic. The idea that here this was supposed to be an inspirational trip. This was supposed to be, you know, getting a teacher out into space to do educational bits and relate to the kids. And it was supposed to be something huge and motivational and exciting. And kids across the country were watching the launch live. Or was this their reentry? I can't remember even when did they go up? Was it on the way up or the way down? I thought it was the way up. Now, hold on. Now I have to go stop and look. I actually did a little research for this, and I didn't even catch this because I thought I knew this part. Hold on a sec. Wow. Okay, sorry that took so long, which you don't realize because I had it on pause, but that took me a few minutes. Yeah, I was right. It was on the way up, 73 seconds into their flight, and the Challenger exploded. But the reason it took me so long is I did not realize that Christina McAuliffe, as a teacher on the basically a guest on the space shuttle, was listed as a payload specialist. And there were 5 astronauts and 2 payload specialists, which apparently means passenger in this case. And so that's the part I didn't realize. I thought Christina McAuliffe, as a school teacher, was sent up as our first passenger into space. But no, she was one of 2. There was a dude on there named Greg Jarvis, who was, granted, he was a United States Air Force captain, and he was military himself, but he wasn't an astronaut. He was an engineer. They had 2 guest slots, one filled by a school teacher, and she's the one who got all the press about it, and one was a U.S. Air Force engineer who was going up for other reasons. And so it was 2 guests, and I guess I'm just floored by that. Because I was always under the impression that it was 6 astronauts and Christina McAuliffe, and she was the only civilian. And, well, technically she was the only civilian. But again, the other guy was a guest. Again, military, not a civilian, but he was a guest. I'm just baffled by that. I'm amazed that, I mean, I was watching it. I saw it happen. I lived through this. It's not like this, and yet somehow the reporting never mentioned that, or if they did mention it, it was never in any way that sunk in with me at all. I've never known that. I'm flabbergasted, stunned. Anyway, back to the story. So as it turns out, when Spinney tells this story, he says, that was the flight I was supposed to be on. If I had gone, that would have been it. And holy cow, he's obviously grateful that he's not dead. He's so sorry that this tragedy happened. And it's a great story. It's a great story. But I thought to myself, that sounds apocryphal. That sounds a little bit off, doesn't it? I mean, really? There we go. You know, the kind of that, you know, how many people have told the story and said, oh, you know, I was supposed to be there that day. I was supposed to be on that flight. I was supposed to be in the World Trade Center that day. And I just, and you know, there's way more stories of people who just barely missed death than people who probably actually really did just miss death. I mean, people will interpret things in such a way as to put themselves closer to the disaster than they really were. And I was wondering if that was the case here. And it turns out he's mostly correct. That apparently he came out with this in an interview just recently, and so a bunch of people were questioning whether or not Big Bird really was supposed to be on a space shuttle. So NASA issued their own statement. The letter came out saying, yes, absolutely. We were in negotiations with Sesame Street, with Carol Spinney. We were going to get Big Bird on the ship. That was our plan. We really, really wanted him because this would have been awesome. And as it turns out, because of the costume, that was all they ever got, was initial inquiries, and they kind of talked a little bit, but they hadn't gotten as far as giving him a slot. All right, they never did get to that point because they just realized it wasn't practical for them, sorry. And so to say, oh, I was supposed to be on that flight, maybe, maybe not. I mean, if they could have worked it out to make some arrangements with Big Bird, if that suit had been practical to go up, would he have been on the first flight? Maybe, maybe not, but they never got that far into the discussions. It was never, apparently there were other slots that were taken up, and once they actually got people sort of nailed down for it, okay, apparently, these first 2 went on the first flight, and then they had other people slotted in for other later shuttle flights. And so they had a whole bunch of people who were lined up for it. And of course, after this one blew up, the shuttle program got put on hold for a while they did investigations, and then they never did resume the guest program in the same way. And so all of the slots that were scheduled were just canceled. So is it possible that Big Bird, had the suit been workable, is it possible that he could have been on that shuttle? Yeah, absolutely. And imagine that. That's the part of this that just floors me. Imagine what would have happened if Big Bird died in space. I shudder to think of it. I mean, okay, it's an incredible story as far as, you know, a movie goes, beloved childhood character, figure, you know, beloved childhood figure who goes into space for this inspirational mission and then dies. That would make a spectacular movie, a spectacular story to talk about how it comes about and the aftermath of it. But to imagine it actually happening, horrifying. Imagine millions of kids across the country watching that live. Millions of adults across the country who grew up with Big Bird and loved Big Bird. I loved Big Bird when I was a kid. I love Muppets in general, and I loved Sesame Street. I watched Sesame Street religiously when I was a kid. My favorite show. And so imagine whether you're a kid who loves Sesame Street or whether you're an adult who just has these fond memories, this nostalgia, this, you know, one day my kids will watch this with me. And then seeing Big Bird die live on television. Holy cow. That's just crushing. Just absolutely crushing. I can't even imagine. The only thing that could have been worse is if it had been Big Bird holding hands with Mr. Rogers. But on the other hand, and the reason they planned it, imagine if they had done it and it worked. Imagine if they had done it and Big Bird really had been shooting live shots from space. Unbelievable. So anyway, that fascinating story. I was just hooked by that one. So speaking of, as long as I'm here, I wasn't going to talk about this. I have decided the history segments I've done, this is just good stories just to tell in general. We were at a camp a couple nights ago with the Boy Scouts and Eli. Oh, Eli is great at this. They're in this perfect window as scouts that they just joined Boy Scouts. So they've moved out from Cub Scouts. They've just joined Boy Scouts. But the way the troop has kind of fallen out, a bunch of kids moved on. And so it's only kids in this like little 2-year age range. And so there's like 10 of them that all went out on this camping trip. And they don't have any older kids there to boss them around and tell them how it's supposed to be done. But they also don't have any younger kids to get underfoot and take away the focus of the camping and all this. It's just them, just their group of 11, 12, 13-year-olds. And they had a blast. It was a super short camp out, but they just had a blast. It was great. And what happened sitting around the campfire, they wanted to tell stories. They wanted to tell scary stories, because that's what kids always want to do when they're on a camp out. Oh, so someone tell a ghost story. And what they don't realize is that ghost stories are really hard to tell without being cheesy or obvious or telling a story that half the people have heard in several forms before. It's a really tough thing to do. But as they're sitting around and everyone's kind of milling about and they're wanting a story, but no one really knows a good one. I told them the Lake Nyos story, my exploding lake story from way back. And it was really good. I mean, and I'm working just kind of from memory, but Lake Nyos is one that I love. And so I remember that one pretty well. I knew most of the details. Just before I started telling the story, I took like a minute to pull it up on the internet and just kind of refresh myself at like the date. I couldn't remember what year it was. 1986, apparently. Same year that Big Bird could have died on the space shuttle. And so I told them my exploding lake story from that unnamed history segment. And it went over like gangbusters. Oh, they had so much fun listening to it. And they had so many good questions. And we talked about all sorts of stuff. Because not only is it a good unnamed history segment, but the exploding lake, Lake Nyos. And if you guys, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. If you haven't heard me tell it yet, go back and get that episode. Because it's a good story. It's a really fun one. But because of the nature of the exploding lake, well, it's exploding because the way it was situated geologically, volcanically, it was a lake super saturated with carbon dioxide. And the way the carbon dioxide was held in solution and then how it was released and caused the lake to explode, not only did I give them good exciting history, an exciting story, but I also got to mix a bunch of science into it as we talked about carbonation and gases versus liquids and dissolving, and we talked a little bit about geology and weather, and ultimately ended it on a lesson about, hey, what a horrible tragedy. The chances of it happening again are 100%. It is a matter of time before it happens again. We have a way to fix it, and no one's willing to pay the money to fix it. So these people sit here in danger forever because no one's willing to do what needs to be done. And then we talked about other exploding lakes and the one that has the chance of releasing an exploding ball of methane, and they're not doing anything about it. And so a little environmental lesson on top. It was just cool. And so what I've decided is, and then they begged for another story after that. So I told them my, which one was it? The abandoned missile silo story, if you guys remember that one. And they loved that one too. And I felt kind of bad because I get halfway through the my dad took me to explore an abandoned missile silo story. Halfway through, Eli is just pissed. He's like, how have you never told me this story before? I'm like, I haven't? No! So, okay. And so what I've decided is, and those are the only two I could come up with off the top of my head. They kept begging for more stories, and I couldn't. I could think of some of them. What was her name? The widow pirate who was she? I can't even remember her name now. I should have looked it up. I've got a mental block on it. But the most powerful female pirate of all time. And I wanted to tell her story, but I couldn't remember enough details. I mean, I know I love that story. I know just some kind of sketchy stuff about it, but I don't remember enough details. And so I decided what I'm going to do is before each camp out, I'm going to go back and re-listen to episodes that have unnamed history segments in them, and I'm going to try doing those each time. So I'm giving them, and that's the best part, is these are exciting stories, stories that I've already talked about, so I love talking about, things that I already enjoy explaining, and they're true. True stories. Historical stories with lessons in them. I'm so excited to share this stuff. And they responded so well. It was great. So I had a great time. You know what? More than anything, I'm just patting myself on the back for what a good job I did. Good job, Mike. You're awesome. That's the end of my unnamed history segment. Did I finish telling the story I was here to tell? Yeah, Big Bird. We got all the way through that. And then I went on about me for a while. So now I'm fat and happy. And let's see. Well, not as fat as I used to be. But fatter than I need to be. Darn it. I've lost another 20-ish pounds, and then tomorrow is the final weigh-in at work. We're having a Biggest Loser weight loss contest, whatever it is. I don't remember the exact title. But we're having a contest, and I'm weighing in tomorrow, and I was doing a little bit better, but this weekend is Mother's Day, and we went to graduations, and we went out to eat, and we went to... darn it. I'm a little disappointed in myself. I could have been 2 pounds lighter by the way in tomorrow, but I chose to pick out for this long graduation / camp out / Mother's Day holiday weekend. So darn me. Anyway, I'll let you know how that goes. What's up next? Well, that's not it. That's the Podomatic list, and we're not up to Podomatic yet, are we? Oh, you know what? Actually, I think we might be. Because, again, my next one is my nerd rage, but I've talked on too long. And this is too bad, and here's why I'm not going to get into it. Just so you know, I actually did some work on this one. I actually have it halfway scripted. I've got, like, enough notes in here to make sure I don't forget important points. So, I mean, it's just the occasional word or two, but it's enough to make sure that I hit all the high points. And I'm looking at it going, yeah, I think this is about a 30-minute rage. I really do. All right, tell you what. Here's my promise to you, because I put it off from last week. Next week, I will open with the rage. We'll just start with the rage, and if it takes up my entire meticulously plotted portion of the podcast, then that's what it does. This is like the comic getting bumped at the end of Carson. Sorry, we've got to bump a guest because Dom DeLuise went on too long with his stupid stories and his wheezy laugh. So, sorry. Well, actually, and Dom DeLuise was actually usually pretty funny, especially if he was on with Burt Reynolds. But I digress. So, actually, it turns out that my computer was correct, and it really is time for the pause. pathetic! Holy blueberries! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped-out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Then you send your question or topic to me by email or, better yet, in a private message on my now working forums. Thank goodness. The problem just magically went away by itself. I don't know why, which means that I still have a real problem and I need to look into it, but now I'm lulled into a false sense of security and I can pretend that I don't have to do anything. Isn't that great? And if you send me Podomatic entries, I will add them to my Podomatic list. Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be. And first up, number 40. 40 is, let's see, nope, further down than that. There it is. 40 is from Akiva. All right. So, he says, what's it like living in a rural area? I've lived in suburban or urban environments my whole life, except one year in a not-that-big town, Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So I have no idea what it's like. Enlighten me. All right, first off, let me go look and see how big Oshkosh is so I can give you a comparison here, Akiva. Okay, Oshkosh, Wisconsin apparently has 66,000 people in it, which is more than twice the number of people that live in my town. But, see, my town is kind of a regional hub, and so we're not exactly rural. I live surrounded by rural community, but I live in an actual city, a town, however you want to classify it. And I don't know what our exact population is, 20,000, 30,000, somewhere in there. So I live in town. I don't live out in the country. My in-laws live out in the country. But they don't even have, it's not like a real farm, but they have enough acres that they've got a few horses and they have a few cows and they've had over the years, you know, chickens and ducks and other stuff. And they have enough land that they grow, it's, my mother-in-law calls it her garden, but it's big. So she grows a lot of different stuff. And, but it's not actual farming. It's not like they use farm machinery to do it. I mean, they have a couple of tractors, but that's not, anyway. Yeah, I mean, you just need a tractor to haul in hay every once in a while, stuff like that. And so they live on an acreage, and they have enough land for a little mini farm. And they're in a rural area, but they're also, you know, a three-minute drive from the local grocery store. I mean, it's not like they're that far out. So hard to say. I mean, we live surrounded by farm. You know, I can drive 5 miles in any direction, and I will be looking at somebody's cornfield. But I'm still in town. So it's not a, I guess my friends have plenty of friends, or my friends, my kids have plenty of friends who do live on farms, or have lived on farms. Kids who are being bused in, you know, 5-6 miles to get to school every day. They live on a farm, but they come into town for their school and their sports activities and their other stuff. I don't know. It's a simpler lifestyle, I suppose, because your options are a little more limited. So, you know, if I want to go out to the movies, we have one movie theater within 50 miles of here. And it's right here in town. I mean, it's just down the block. But it's a Cineplex 7, and so I've got 7 movie screens. Usually, 2 movies there will be playing with a 3D option and a non-3D option. So I maybe have 5 or 6 movies to choose from on any given night. And things don't stick around very long. Because, yeah, I make room for the new releases. And that's why, I mean, Avengers is big, but I don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, do I have one more weekend with Avengers here? If I don't see it next weekend, I've probably missed it. But it's also, I guess, one of the nicest things about living in it's a rural area, even though it's not necessarily a rural community that I'm in. One of the nice things about being around here, though, is if I need to go somewhere in town, right, whether it's the grocery store or Walmart or the movie theater or the bank, or it doesn't matter where I'm going, it takes me 5 minutes to get there. If I have to go all the way from one side of the town, for example, the hospital I work in is just on the outskirts of town. Like, literally, we're looking at the college and housing developments on these two sides of us, and we're looking at cornfield and abandoned woods on the other two sides of us. So we're right on the edge of town. If I need to go from that edge of town all the way to the real hospital, which is the other side of town, okay, that's a 10-minute drive. That's the very tops for anything that I could have to do. So it's kind of nice that everything is right there. Everything you need is right here and easy to get to. For me, if I'm commuting 30 minutes to get to work or 30 minutes to get anywhere, that means I'm driving 20 miles. That means I've left town and I'm driving to the next town over. If I've got a 30-minute commute, that means I'm going to a different town to get there. As opposed to my brother-in-law and his wife, who live in the city of Lincoln, Nebraska, which is, I don't know, are they up to 100,000 people now? Lincoln's a pretty big city. And, no, it's more than that. Anyway, I don't remember exactly. It's different because when college is in session, there's an extra, 50,000 people there. But they live in Lincoln, and they talk about, driving in to downtown or to wherever to get to something that they need to get to. And it's like, it could potentially be 45 minutes. And they're going all of maybe, 8 miles, 10 miles, and it's going to take them half hour to 45 minutes to get where they're going. God, for me, half hour, 45 minutes, that's a long-ass drive. That is me going, that's me going two or three towns over at that point. So, for me, when I talk about driving, I'm talking about a mile a minute. That's everywhere I'm going to go that's more than 5 minutes away is I'm driving on a highway somewhere. But it also means that we've got less selection of stuff. And my wife and I, as we were just in Lincoln for graduations, the other day I told you about that. And we went out to eat, and we just went to Hoo Hot. We didn't do anything fancy, but we loved it. And as we were talking about it, it was a matter of, wow, maybe when we retire, maybe when the kids are gone, maybe we might want to live in a larger town. Just to, once we've got the leisure time and the extra cash to, go out to eat a couple nights a week instead of, once every couple of weeks like we do now. It'd be nice to have some selections, some variety, because if we want to go out to eat, sit down somewhere, we got all of maybe 7 restaurants to choose from in town that we kind of rotate between. And there's a few others, but we don't really care for those as much or whatever. But anyway, that's one of the biggest differences, I suppose. It's just your sets of options. Other than that, I don't know. I've lived in bigger towns. I've lived in lots of places. I guess, I don't know. You would think I'm really, really qualified to answer this question, but nothing comes to mind. It's just it's just a little simpler, I guess. I don't know. Not a great answer to your question, Akiva, but it's the one I've got now, and now I'm going to escape. 21. I probably rambled on too long. I think that's my problem. So, anyway. 21 is from Mrs. Darks. What's the better building system, Legos or Kinects? It's Legos. It's clearly Legos. I like both, but Legos feel, I don't know, they feel just more solid to me. I get Kinects does more stuff in motion. You're dealing with gears and spokes and bars and I've seen the huge fancy Kinects Ferris wheel that they'll put on display around Christmas season at different places, and that thing is fantastic. And I would absolutely love to have that and build that. But I don't know if Lego is necessarily better, but Lego speaks to my heart in a way that Kinects doesn't. I love my Legos, and I've seen some pretty amazing complex stuff done with Legos, and I guess, okay, no, here's the difference for me. It is, Legos are solid. Legos are just solid, and Kinects are flimsy. They're framework. It's the difference between building a skyscraper and building the Eiffel Tower. The Eiffel Tower can be just as tall. The Eiffel Tower is an amazing work of art, and it is some fantastic engineering feats. That was the word I was looking for. And It's cool, but a skyscraper is solid, and you can't... I've built an Eiffel Tower out of Legos. You can do it, and you could build one out of Kinex. You can't build the Empire State Building out of Kinex. You can build a wire frame in the shape of the Empire State Building with Kinex, but you can't build a building. You can't have solid walls. You can't have... It's not the same. It just... I mean, like I said, Kinex is cool, but it just doesn't feel the same. And that's not... That's not entirely true. What are the... No. I'm thinking of a different set of blocks. No, Kinex are the ones... You know, I was thinking correctly with Kinex. Yes, those are framework stuff. It's just not... There is a set of blocks that Noah was really into for years, and he'll still occasionally pull them out, but they're built larger, so they're more for younger kids, and he's kind of getting to where he's outgrowing them. Treo blocks, which are really cool because they are a combination of interlocking Lego-ish blocks. I mean, it's a different system. It's not just a Lego knockoff. They're actually different styles of blocks. But they are interlocking bricks that can build solid stuff, but every brick also has holes in them on all sides so that you can... They have these peg connectors, and you can get long pegs and short pegs and curved pegs, but you can connect them in different ways that is more reminiscent of Kinex. They're kind of a hybrid system, and he loved those, and he built some really cool stuff out of those. Those were really awesome and really flexible. But I'm going to go Legos all the way. 85. Oh, I just realized I haven't been labeling these. Hold on. Mrs. Darts was number 2. The first one was 40. That was Akiva. Here's number 1. And now we're at 85. 85 will be number 3. If I don't number them, I lose them later, and then they don't get taken off the list. All right, number 85 is from Zimney. And Zimney says, if you could design your own kilt, what would it look like? If I were designing a kilt, it would be a tartan pattern, but you didn't ask me to design my tartan. You're asking me to design my kilt. I don't understand... I don't know enough about kilts to know my design, as in other than it's a kilt. It's a skirt that is heavily pleated in the back to form all those folds. I looked at what it takes to make your own kilt. And you have to use so many yards of fabric. Like, you know, what do I have, a 40-inch waist? Something like that. I think it's a little... 40 is probably close. I'm wearing size 38 pants, but maybe it should be closer to 40. It doesn't make any difference. My waist is roughly a yard around, right? And if you want to make your own kilt, you start with 9 yards of material, because that's how pleated this thing is. 9 yards of material. That's phenomenal. For an authentic kilt, that's what it takes. Holy crap. And the reason I was looking at making your own kilt is I thought that a cool cosplay idea, something especially to wear to conventions, I always thought Scottish Joker would be a really cool idea. And so you wind up doing, you know, from the waist up, it's just traditional Joker. All right, you can do your purple suit, your green hair, the makeup, the whole business, and then from the waist down, you're wearing a kilt, and you become Scottish Joker. And so you do your kilt and your sporran and your whatever stockings and shoes that look like they're Scottish, I don't know. And then you would have to do your kilt in a purple and green tartan to match the Joker's color theme. And so I looked and I couldn't find any purple tartans that there weren't purple kilts that really kind of matched what I was looking for, because I was looking for something that was largely purple but with a little bit of green run through it. I couldn't find it. I thought, hey, but if I find the right fabric, could I make it myself? Could I make a kilt? And no, I couldn't. But I just wanted to see what it would take. Can't do it. If I were to design my own, I don't know. I would do it in a plaid pattern. I would do a tartan. I would do, because I mean, I've seen the Utila kilts, and I understand that they're actually pretty handy and kind of cool for the right guy. But But I would want mine to be with the actual plaids because I would like it to be, I don't know. It would, if I'm going to walk out in a skirt, I want to make it really obvious I'm wearing a kilt. It's just because I'm not a skirt or a dress kind of guy myself. I've never worn one in public that I know of. I don't think I would be comfortable doing that. And so I would want to make it look, and that's not a sexist thing. It's just I've never done that. So, but I don't know. I have no idea what it would look like. I mean, what am I going to add fins on it? Spoiler on the back? I have no idea. It would look like a kilt. I wouldn't design one. I'd just go buy one if I was interested in kilting, I guess. Sorry, bad answer. 81. We're almost there anyway. 81 is Akiva again. All right, Akiva. Akiva says, I need some legal advice. I listen to this podcast called, he says, I'm not doing that myself. He says it's called Geek Pride Radio. At the end of every episode, there's this lame segment called the Geek-O-Matic. All right, I'm starting to get offended here, young man, where the host demands that all his listeners send in topics or questions for him to discuss. I can see that. That seems like a reasonable behavior from a podcast. My question is, does this behavior constitute harassment? If so, can I sue? And can you recommend a good attorney? If you live in the state of Texas, and if your question is related to labor or employment, then I could recommend my brother. He is a very good attorney, from what he tells me, and I believe him. Outside of that, no. I think you are East Coast-ish, and I don't know anybody out that direction, so I wish I could recommend someone to you. But if you would like to move to Texas so that you can have this question addressed there, then I highly recommend my brother. He's cool. But does this behavior constitute harassment? You're listening to the podcast. Do you not know where the off switch is? I don't. There's a mute button. You could just turn it off. It's a little X in the top right corner. Maybe you're listening to it on an iPod. Well, you can hit stop. Or on your Kindle. Yeah, you know what? Just shut down the app. You're fine. Is it harassment if you're choosing to listen to it? And because here's the thing. Harassment, if it's just a single request, that's not harassment, right? A single request? No, that's not harassment. It's the multiple requests thing. And you would think that after the second time, you're going to realize, I do this all the time. This person you're listening to. So, if you know that listening to this podcast is going to subject you to that behavior, but you choose to listen anyway, are you in any way culpable for this? I mean, wouldn't you put the blame maybe, I don't know, 62% on yourself? I mean, like, I'm not saying I'm going to sue you. I'm not. I wouldn't. All right? I'm just saying I think you are mostly to blame. 51 is from Mrs. Darks again. Hey, Mrs. Darks. And she says, are Santa's elves really gnomes? Discuss. I'll give you a topic. Are Santa's elves really gnomes? Well, in Pathfinder terms, they would have to be. You're absolutely correct. If Santa Claus lived in Galarion in the Pathfinder world, yes, he would be employing gnomes. And, you know, in fact, stereotypically, lots of gnomes in D&D/Pathfinder settings nowadays are tinkerers, more steampunky, more technologically oriented. And so being tinkerers, builders, and they're the right height, they've got the pointy ears, they would be mistaken for elves by ignorant humans from our world who aren't familiar with the multitude of races available. And so therefore, yeah, that would make a lot of perfect sense, wouldn't it? Now, hold on. I am so sorry. I'm recording late at night. It's been a long weekend. I just completely yawned on you, so sorry about that. You're boring me. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You're boring me. And anyway, I was going to come up with a counterpoint to that on how, in our world, however, but you know what? I don't think I'm going to give you a counterpoint to that. I am pretty sure that they really are gnomes. That's crazy. I mean, mostly shaven gnomes, although depends on the version of the Santa story that you're watching. Some of them are bearded. Weird. I never thought of that before. That's a good point. 11. 11 comes from Humongous. Hey, Humongous. Humongous asks, my only flaw is that I am an arachnophobe wink. Do you have any phobias? I'm sorry. Is wink a stage direction? I am an arachnophobe wink. I don't know what arachnophobe wink. I'm wondering if I'm reading this wrong. Hold on 2 seconds. Nope. The internet did not illuminate some reference that I'm completely missing here. So I think I'm reading this wrong. Or wink is a either wink is a term that I'm not familiar with in this context, or it was meant to be a stage direction. Either way, Humongous, if you want to correct me or explain, you certainly can do so. But the real meat of this question is, do you have any phobias? And I don't have any irrational phobias that I am aware of. However, I do occasionally get a little panicky or nervous or overwrought when there are real dangers present, and some people seem to think that I overreact to real danger at times. So, for example, heights make me queasy and uncomfortable, and that's fine. But I enjoy going up to great heights because I enjoy that queasy, scared, adrenaline rush sort of feeling. I like the tension of that. But you put my kids near a height where there is an actual possibility that they could fall, that you know, hey, look, you know, if you're carrying the baby in your arms and you walk up to the edge of the railing, you've now got the baby's center of mass higher than the railing. If you stumble, you could literally drop a toddler over the edge of this rail to its death. And all it would take is a little stumble. That freaks me the hell out. All right, that puts me into panic mode. I can't watch. I can't be near it. I can't, when there is an actual real danger. So, you know, you've gone up to a really high place and you've gotten to, you know, watching like one of those tower climber videos where these are people who are just holding on. There's no rails. There's nothing stopping you. If you slip, if you fall, if you trip, you're going to fall to your death. That's horrifying. That's panicking. All right, I go to the top of the Willis Tower in Chicago, and they've got the glass balcony, so you can walk out, and you're standing on a glass floor, so you can look straight down onto the city below. Yes, that's terrifying in its own way, but I know I'm not in any real danger. All right, my kid goes out and sits out there, and he squeals and has a good time and freaks out because it's so amazing and scary. It's great, and I can watch him do that, and it doesn't bother me because I know there's no real danger. But you put someone in a situation where there's actual real danger, yeah, that'll make me a little panicky. That's where my fears kick in. That's where my phobias kick in. But I don't think it's unreasonable. I mean, you know, your traditional phobias, snakes, I don't care. I got a half dozen snakes living under my front porch right now, and they're awesome. I love them. Spiders, yeah, whatever. I don't want a spider crawling on me, but if it does, not worried about it. In fact, speaking of arachnids, if you're an arachnophobe, that camping trip I talked about this weekend and the one last weekend, it was like all the ticks were invited to the party, is what I'm saying. It was, we were just picking them off left and right. That you would sit around the fire, you'd feel something crawling on your leg. You're like, oh, yep, lift up the jeans, and sure enough, there's a tick on your thigh or on the back of your calf or wherever it is. Pick that sucker off, pitch it in the fire. Just wait. Oh, there's one on your kid's shirt. Pick that off, throw it in the fire. Ticks everywhere. If ticks make you queasy, you would not have enjoyed this trip. That's, but you know, again, ticks, it's just a bug. Ticks are creepy, yeah, but, you know, I don't want them on me. Don't like them. But they're also, you know, unless you're going to go worrying about Lyme disease or something like that. Really, I mean, they're slow moving, they're easy to catch, they're easy to notice, and if they do latch on, it's not like you're in any real danger. You can pick them off safely, you can get rid of them. It's not a, I don't know, ticks are creepy, don't like them, but, you know, no phobia about it. What are the other common phobias? Claustrophobia? All right, I get a little panicky when I'm being restrained, and when I got buried in the sand. Last time I got buried in the sand, which is a dangerous thing to do. Look, there is a real danger there because people have suffocated and died from being buried in the sand. Just the weight of the sand on their chest has kept them from being able to breathe properly. And I've been buried in the sand plenty of times in my life, but the last time it was panic-inducing. I mean, I freaked out badly, and I will never do that again because it scared me so bad. And again, just buried in the sand. Up, you know, I'm sitting in a hole, and I'm buried up to my neck, and you know, all my friends just went through this exact same thing. Now it was my turn, and I lost it. I lost it bad. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that I was, you know, in college at the time, and I didn't want to embarrass myself in front of my friends and look like a wuss when all of them had already done it, I would have bawled. I was so close. I could have just cried. It was terrifying. But again, yeah, I don't have any big phobias. Nothing huge right out of line. Unless, of course, you just heard all of those stories and I just revealed that all of those are really unreasonable, horrible phobias and that I'm some kind of idiot for not recognizing that. Maybe that's possible. I don't know. You be your own judge of whether or not my fears are unreasonable. 99 takes us down to, let's see, it's Mrs. Darks again. All right, way to go. Mrs. Darks says, do you find modern black and white photography artistic or silly? What about sepia? Artistic. I have no problem. If someone finds a really cool photo, takes a really cool photo, I appreciate photography as art. When people want to present it that way, I have no problem with photography itself as art. And then for some of them, if you want to convert it to black and white because you think it makes more of an impact that way, sure. I have no problem with that. That is also an artistic statement. Sepia tone, same thing. I think black and white and sepia are both a little bit overused. I think filters of any sort are really, a lot of people mistake putting a filter on something as art when it can be an artistic statement. It really can. But, and in fact, I guess it's always an artistic statement, but just because you change it to black and white doesn't suddenly make it better. There are some pictures that really benefit from black and white, and there are some pictures that don't. And there are some pictures that just weren't that good to begin with, and it doesn't matter what filter you put on, it's still not that great a picture. You can't make it all artsy just by changing it to black and white. It's just not going to happen. So, but yeah, I think it's fine. I just think, you know, again, there's some really, really good art in the world, in any medium, and then for every piece of good art, there's, you know, 800 really, really bad ones. Or mediocre ones, or whatever. So, yes, it can be a good artistic statement, even if it is overused or misused by some people. It can certainly be art in the right hands. 58. Well, that's not 58. That was 72. I don't know what I was thinking. 58 is from Humongous. All right, Humongous. What alien movie is your fave? And he has Alien in with a capital letter in front of it. So, therefore, he's talking about the actual Alien series that originated with Sigourney Weaver. Was Sigourney Weaver in all of the Alien movies? I don't know. I haven't seen them all. So here's the deal. I have seen Alien, and I've seen Aliens. I have not seen any other Alien movies, so therefore, I am not qualified to judge. Oh, I saw Prometheus, which was terrible. It shouldn't even be considered. So, I'm going to say, of the two that I've seen, I loved them both. I thought they were great. Alien was a genius film. It was original, and it was scary, genuinely scary, and played out the horror in a very subdued sort of way. For maybe that sounds silly to some of you, but compared to modern horror movies and where the franchise itself went, it was very subdued but effective, and I really, really liked Alien. But Aliens was pretty damn impressive too, and it was fun in a different way. It was a bigger movie. It was a more action-packed movie. It moved at a quicker pace. It had Bill Paxton yelling, "Game over, man! Game over!" Oh, see? That's classic stuff. And I really liked that one, too. If I had to pick a favorite, I would say Aliens. I would go with the second one as my favorite. I really would. And I feel almost bad saying it because I really want to pick the original, but I know if I picked the original, I would regret it, and I would think, oh, yeah, but what about the second? So I'm going to go with Aliens. That's my favorite. But again, I've only got a pool of two to choose from because Prometheus doesn't count. So if someone has seen all of the Alien movies and would like to give me an opinion counter to this one because you have more information than I do, I welcome that. 30. Mrs. Darks, way to dominate, lady. Mrs. Darks says, if you had to pick one condition to have for the rest of your life, either eye floaties or hiccups, which would you choose? Eye floaties, eye floaties, eye floaties. Oh my God, have you ever had hiccups that lasted more than a couple of days? It is so exhausting. It's painful. It's exhausting. It's nerve-wracking when you have hiccups that go on for multiple days, which happens for me. It happens when I'm sick already with something else, and so my defenses are down, and you let the hiccups go on too long for the first day, and they get to the point where you've now weakened your diaphragm. You've weakened your reflexes to it, and so I can get rid of hiccups pretty effectively most times. It might take me two or three shots, but I can get rid of hiccups on my own pretty quickly. And when I get hiccups that last for a long time, it's because, I don't know, they keep coming back a couple times, and then your diaphragm is weak enough that you just can't stop it. It's just going to keep recurring. So you can get rid of it temporarily, and then 2 minutes later it's back. It's exhausting. I hate long-term hiccups. Eye floaties would be annoying, but I think I could learn to deal with those. I think I would learn to work around them. Because the way my attention works, yeah, you know what? I can habituate to something pretty quickly and just start ignoring it. I could do that. Hiccups I couldn't ignore. So, yeah, definitely go with the eye floaties. Holy cow. And to get rid of hiccups for me, and this, I'm not going to promise this works for everybody, but for me, it is a matter of depriving yourself of oxygen for a sufficient length of time. And that's why a lot of people will tell you, hold your breath to get rid of hiccups. Well, if you take a deep breath and you hold it, you're going to have to hold it for a long time. For me to hold my breath long enough to get rid of hiccups, I'd have to go 2 minutes, because you have to go until it's painful. All right, so what I do, and again, I don't know if this works for anybody else, but here's what I do. Let out all the air in my lungs. I mean, work at it. Blow out every bit of air you've got in your lungs. Get them as completely deflated as possible. And then once you've done that, now hold your breath. Because it won't take very long at all to get to the oxygen starvation point. All right, you can blow out all your air, and then, within about 15 seconds, you're hurting, all right? And just try and hold it as long as you can. And once it gets to the point where you think you can't possibly take it anymore, all right, crack your lips just enough, just one little pinhole, just enough to suck in air really slowly, all right? Just this tiny bit, like you're sucking air through a cocktail straw, okay? That's all the air you can let in at once. All right, and so you are now inhaling, so you're getting some oxygen, but if you're just inhaling through that little pinhole, you're getting oxygen, but not enough. Your body is still oxygen starved. You kind of keep yourself just at that level of, it's just too much, just for a few extra seconds. All right, so you let out all your air. You hold it as long as you can, like 15 seconds. It starts to hurt a little bit. Now you start taking in the air. And, okay, you're not going to die. You're getting air, but not enough. So you're still at that oxygen-starved level for another 10 seconds, 15 seconds that takes you to inhale. And then that's it. If I do that, and then, okay, now just breathe slowly and evenly as much as possible, which will be hard, because, again, your oxygen is starved. But try to breathe as slowly and evenly as possible, and they're gone. And that will work for me. If not on the first try, it'll work on the second try almost every time. And now, again, does that work for everybody? I have no idea, because people have given me tons of hiccup cures over the years, and this is the only thing that has ever worked for me. So those hiccup cures must be out there because they work for some people. So therefore, you know, if mine doesn't work, well, you're just a different type. You'll find one that does. And I remember the last time that I had multiple day hiccups, and it was like 3 or 4 days. It was terrible. And I remember because I had my hiccup cure method, my foolproof hiccup cure method. It always worked for me. And I must have done it 100 times over the course of 3 or 4 days. And it, half the time it wouldn't work at all. The other half the time it would work. And then literally within 30 seconds, a minute, I was back to it. Because for me, when I have hiccups, if I breathe too quickly, I hiccup. If I cough every time, oh, that's the worst part. I cough, hiccup every time. Hate it. Anyway, enough about how much I hate hiccups. Let's move on. 89. R2 loves the 80s today. No, I'm not going to make a joke about that show. Okay, 89. Mrs. Darks again. She is going to close this out today. And Mrs. Darks says, what are some alternate names for the Pod-O-Matic? That is a great question. The Wheel of Nerdity. I don't have any good suggestions. It's only ever had one other name. When I was on the Animal Cast with my brother, we would do Instant Podcast, is what we called it. And was Instant Podcast a list of listener suggestions? Yeah, it was. We took listener suggestions. We put them onto a table, and then we would yell, one of us out of nowhere would yell, Instant Podcast! And then we'd throw some dice, and we'd see what came up on the table. And I liked that idea so well, and I wanted to bring it over to my own show, but actually make it a bigger fixture than it was for the Animal Cast. And I like the way it's turned out, but I don't know. I thought of the idea, and I don't remember it. I don't remember how it came about, going from Instant Podcast to Pod-O-Matic. I don't, because there weren't any other names. There were no other possibilities. It was, I think I had been thinking about bringing over Instant Podcast. I was thinking of just, keeping it as Instant Podcast. Look, we play Instant Game. That's where it came from. Instant Game was rolling up a random game out of nowhere. Use the tables that we provided, and you get yourself an instant role-playing game with your setting there and your plot and everything laid out for you. Instant Game. My wife and I play Instant Roku, and that's the way the chart is labeled. We go in and we roll the dice, and it gives us a random number from 1 to however many movies are on our Netflix list. And we play Instant Roku, and we pull up a movie to watch at random. That's just how we always did random numbers. And then something changed that I was going to do Instant Podcast for Nerd Pride Radio, and I saw the Pop-O-Matic Trouble game with R2-D2 built right inside of it, and there was something so nerdy about having R2 inside the Pop-O-Matic bubble that I decided that this is how I'm going to roll up my random numbers, is I'm going to use R2 and a Pop-O-Matic bubble to do it. And the minute I thought of it, Instant Podcast just became Pod-O-Matic. Instead of Pop-O-Matic, it's Pod-O-Matic. And just, there's never been another choice. But you know what? I will take listener suggestions. Not that we'll use them, but I would like to hear other cool and or funny alternatives. Either things that would be really funny if I had named the Pod-O-Matic that, or things that actually would have been cool alternatives. If I hadn't gone with Podomatic, what else could I have called it? And don't rely on R2, okay? As much as I love R2, and I would never change him, and I would never change the Podomatic, I like the way it works. But if I was going to roll up random numbers to pick out topics, like the Wheel of Nerdity, that was the first thing I thought of. I imagined myself having a huge Wheel of Fortune wheel mounted on my wall, and every time I called out Wheel of Nerdity, I could spin it, and you guys could hear the clacking, and then it would stop on one of your entries. So if you've got some other ideas, suggest them. I would love to hear it. All right. Anyway, hey, you know what? That's it. That was our final one, and that means we're done with the major portion of the podcast, and all we need now is GLaDOS to give us a recap of what we've done so far. Go on, GLaDOS. It's all yours.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage and Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. All these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own pocket mod, go to pocketmod.com. They will give you instructions for printing up and folding your very own pocket mod for free. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, then spread the word. Let other people enjoy it as well. And also, look, still, go like me on Facebook. 9 seconds out of your day. You can do that for a buddy, right? Yeah. Facebook is awesome. Check me out on Twitter. Go to iTunes and write a nice review. Any of these would work, but really, more than anything, spread the word and just get other people to listen. Tell them how much you love listening to my podcast. All right, see there, I went on too long. I wanted to, because I always say, you know, I always say tell a friend, and then I realized that, you know, there's still those other things that could work, and then I went on too long, and it just looks like I'm being desperate and begging for attention. You know what, tell you what, if you like it, just keep listening. That's all I want. Just stick around. I love you guys. Okay. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others. All free, all awesome, all the time. If you want to contact me, email mike@nerdprideradio.com, Twitter @nerdprideradio, Facebook, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But you know the truth. To be totally honest with you, the very best way to contact me is to sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forum. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I put out a note on my forums to say that I'm recording, and if anyone wants to add anything to the end of the cast, that's their chance to do so. So here's my question. I'm recording after hours. It's, you know, I didn't start until 9:30-ish on a Sunday night. Do you think anyone caught on? Do you think anyone posted anything? Let's go take a look. Nerd Pride Radio, Listener Betrayal. Nobody responded. And this is what happened the last time I recorded this late on a Sunday night. It happens. You guys can't wait around for me forever. I understand that. I had another interesting story I was going to tell you, and if I can remember what it is, let me look back and see what we were talking about just before, and maybe I can come up with it. Oh. I know what I was going to tell you, and now I'm sorry I brought it up because I stopped telling the story for a reason. But you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. Is when it comes to the Pop-O-Matic bubble and R2, I've always, you know, from the very beginning, I've had R2 right here with me, and he has been awesome. But in the beginning, I never actually opened him up and put dice in him. I told you I did, but I didn't actually do it until a few episodes in. And so I have several episodes where I'm popping him, and you can hear him. you can hear him in the background, and it sounds like he's doing all my work for me. But actually, I just had a randomizer on my spreadsheet, and I was using the random die 100 roll off of my spreadsheet. And then finally, I realized that, you know what? I should really see if I can actually do this because, you know, it would be cool. And it turns out, but what happened was, at that point, I didn't want to tear up the board. He was still attached to the trouble board, and we still had the whole game together. All the pieces were there, and I didn't want to ruin the game, so I never tore him up. And then I decided that, you know what? We're not actually playing Trouble anymore. We have it here. We have all the pieces. But you know what? If we want to play Trouble, the kids have kind of outgrown it. But if they want to play it, we'll go buy another set, honestly. And so I finally tore the board completely off of it. And so now all I have is a little pop-o-matic unit from the center. And once I got it out of the board, yeah, it turns out it's just a couple of screws on the back. It was easy. Well, a couple of screws. It's four screws on the back. It was really super easy. And I cracked them open and I put some dice in. And he worked great. And so I feel bad for having been dishonest with you in the first place. That was really, and I was hesitant to bring it up because I mentioned it to Joel at work. For whatever reason, I had R2 in my bag with me that day. I think I was planning on recording afterwards, and I wanted to make sure I didn't lose him. And so I had showed him R2 and the whole Pop-O-Matic bubble thing, and he was really impressed and thought it was really cool that I had it. And so I told him the truth about how, well, yeah, you know, I didn't used to. It used to be I was just popping him, but I was getting my dice from somewhere else. And he was like, I broke his heart. He's like, what? No, you can't shatter the illusion. Don't. Oh, and I felt really bad about it. And so that's why I was hesitant to kind of come clean with you guys. I wish I could remember which episode I started doing that, where it actually switched to real dice. But anyway, now I've come clean. I've been honest with you. But again, he's really here. And any of you who meet me at Gen Con, I'm going to have him in my bag with me. And I'm going to try and find, because I'm not going to be able to carry my laptop around on the floor with me, but I think I am going to order myself a little MP3 recorder, or maybe even test out my phone. My phone is fairly new. I might have a decent recorder function on my phone or get an app. I may get some decent quality out of it. I should test that out. But anyway, I may record some stuff while I'm at Gen Con. And I may not, but either way, just in case I do, I'm going to have him with me. So anyone who meets me at Gen Con, I'll bring R2 along. You guys can check him out. It's fun. He would love to meet you. But anyway, hey, that's it. Since there is no... Oh, wait, hold on. Let me close down the listener betrayal. Maybe in the last 5 minutes while I've been prattling on about R2, maybe someone has posted something. Hold on. Done. And... Nope, it's still just me. No one's responded. Hold on. Because last time I did this, I closed it down and I said done. And then Lucy posted in stuff at the very last minute, and I totally missed it. So let me see if she's even been on. Nope. There is nobody on the boards but me. So, okay, we haven't missed anything. Anyway, that's it. Say goodnight, R2.